Welcome to the Westell Fiscal Year 2019 Fourth Quarter Earnings Conference Call. My name is Paulette, and I will be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to Tom Minichiello, Westell's Chief Financial Officer. Mr. Minichiello, you may begin.
Thank you, Paulette. Good morning and welcome to our conference call to discuss the fiscal year 2019 fourth quarter results for Westell Technologies. The news release we issued yesterday afternoon is posted on our website, westell.com. On this call, Steve and John, Westell's President and Chief Executive Officer, will begin with the discussion of our business and growth initiatives. I will then update you on our financial results for the quarter, and we'll conclude by taking questions. Before we begin, please note that our presentation and discussion contain forward-looking statements about future results, performance, or achievements, financial and otherwise. Words such as should, believe, expect, trend, and similar expressions are intended to identify such forward-looking statements. These statements reflect management's current expectations, estimates, and assumptions. These forward-looking statements are not guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that may cause Westell's actual results, performance, or achievements to differ materially from those discussed. A description of factors that may affect our future results is provided in the company's SEC filings, including Form 10-K for the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2018, under the section Risk Factors. The forward-looking statements made in this presentation are being made as of the date and time of this conference call. Westell disclaims any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statements based on new information, future events, or other factors. Please also note that we present non-GAAP financial information in our news releases because we believe that non-GAAP measures provide meaningful supplemental information to both management and investors. The non-GAAP information reflects the company's core ongoing operating performance and facilitates comparisons across reporting periods. Our discussion of results today will include non-GAAP financial measures. We've provided reconciliations to the most comparable GAAP measures in our news release. With that, I'll now turn the call over to Steve.
Thank you, Tom. Good morning, everyone. As described in our news release, 4Q revenue was largely affected by the performance of our IBEW segment. Sales of commercial repeaters and DAS conditioners decreased as expected due to the shifting network architectures discussed during previous calls. The real disappointment, however, were the public safety product testing delays related to a partnership arrangement that would have otherwise resulted in higher revenue in the quarter. Our public safety offering, single-channel, half-watt, and two-watt repeaters for the 700, 800 megahertz frequency ranges, limits us to a small subsection of the market. The new suite of products that we are continuing to work through with our partner include additional capacities, frequency ranges, features, and channelization that will enable us to significantly expand our addressable public safety market. We are working through the issues causing the delays, and due to the pent-up demand, expect to have product to ship to customers in the June quarter. In our other two segments, seasonally lower sales of remote units affected ISM revenue after a strong performance the quarter before. C&S revenue increased sequentially, led by solid performances from our power distribution and network connectivity products. Also within C&S, we continue to gain traction in 4Q from our new suite of fiber access solutions for network densification. In a moment, Tom will go over the financial results in more detail. I'd like to now bring you up to date on the initiatives we have underway across all three business segments to drive revenue growth. For IBEW, despite the delays I just mentioned in expanding our public safety product offerings, we remain committed to public safety as a revenue growth driver for the company. It's early in what is projected to be a sustainable growth market for many years to come, and I believe we should be able to expeditiously work through our recent product testing issues. We also recently announced our new GO-Edge solution for on-go private LTE networks in the 3.5 gigahertz CBRS frequency band. Initial plans for GO-Edge include the small cell solution we are jointly developing with IP Access, as well as network software from Druid, who we are partnering with to create robust, reliable, and secure cellular connections for private networks. We are seeing significant activity in the growing ecosystem of suppliers, including Spectrum Access Systems, or SAS, which is being developed by several of the larger vendors. Our GO-Edge roadmap now includes integration with SAS, which is pivotal to Ongo. Right here in our Aurora, Illinois headquarters, we have set up a GoEdge operating lab where we currently test our Ongo small cells, and that progress is on schedule. We have seen growing interest in our solution from integrators, neutral hosts, and enterprise customers. We plan to have our first production units from IP Access in June and have scheduled several field trials across a variety of verticals, including healthcare, hospitality, and retail, as well as for hosted services. We continue to expand our Ongo small cell to be generally available for customers in the October to December quarter of this year. In addition to the IBW public safety and Ongo markets, we are intensely focused on the growing requirements for network densification to enable future 5G connectivity, as well as the associated shift in remote monitoring towards more intelligence at the network's edge. Capacity, intelligence, and deployment simplification at the edge are the key value differentiators and are areas of core expertise within our company that we are building on. For example, we continue to grow our fiber access product portfolio to address the needs of several service providers and network operators for simplified, low-cost deployments as they add new broadband services today and establish the foundation for higher speed, higher capacity 5G network connections in the future. We currently offer a suite of specialized modular cassettes, collapsible reeling systems, and fan-out and other pre-terminated assemblies for deployment in central office, outside plant, and customer premise environments. While slower than we like, we continue to gain traction in the fourth quarter with our existing domestic customers, and our sales opportunity pipeline continues to build with these and other customers. Also, in the area of fiber access, we are excited about a new, innovative, below-grade solution we are developing that we believe overcomes a key hurdle in network densification, extending power and fiber to areas that would otherwise not meet local municipality approval due to aesthetic requirements. It is essentially a large below-grade plastic enclosure, fully equipped, that incorporates many of our products across all three business units: power distribution, fiber connectivity and access, and passive RF components, as well as remote monitoring. Our marketing efforts to date have resulted in opportunities with a number of service provider and neutral host operators, both domestic and internationally, and we expect to be in trials this year with two customers. We've also added product development resources to help focus on a long-term plan to build a full line of fiber access products and solutions. Speaking of monitoring, we have invested additional sales resources in our ISM business with the goal of penetrating deeper within existing accounts as well as expanding into adjacencies such as cable service providers, broadcast, utilities, and select international markets. We recently won a new region within our largest existing domestic customer and have begun to make significant inroads with another large domestic service provider. As an example of vertical market expansion, I mentioned during last quarter's call we are in partnership discussions with an industrial pump monitoring solution that leverages our Optima Cloud service. Having just recently shipped our first 12 remotes for installation at customer trial sites, we are now in the launch phase with this offering. Additionally, we were recently granted approval with another partner for a custom solution to monitor generators for a large national retailer. Our ISM business is currently rolling out a next-generation site management platform, the RMX 4000, which builds on and expands the IoT capabilities of our intelligent site management solution. This new platform offers higher capacity for new, more intelligent infrastructure and new features such as support for wireless sensors and mobile app-based configuration while providing the same high-availability site alarm monitoring, intelligent protocol conversion, and wireless aggregation found throughout our ISM product line. Acting as a smart extension of our Optima management system and other operational support systems, the RMX 4000 is intended to enhance network management strategies, reduce OPEX, and improve operational efficiencies. We have received initial customer orders and expect to recognize our first RMX 4000 revenue in the June quarter. Let me now give you an update on where we are with respect to inorganic growth. We have spent considerable amounts of time, energy, and expense over the past year exploring options for growth through acquisitions, with the goal of expanding the business across all three segments. We were engaged in due diligence with a number of companies that met many of our target acquisition criteria and that could have been a good match. But our healthy balance sheet is a valuable asset. And as I mentioned on our last call, we are not going to make a deal just to get a deal done. Ultimately, as we carefully make decisions around deploying our cash to grow the business, it has to be the right deal in which we are fully confident that it fits both our organic strategies and our financial criteria. So while I wouldn't say we are not going to pursue growth through acquisition, we are now directing more of our energies on the partnership and internal growth initiatives I just outlined. In IBW, public safety and ONGO. In CNS and ISM, densification for 5G and intelligence at the edge of the network. Should any of the potential acquisitions we are pursuing or others present themselves as competently meeting our criteria, we'd certainly be interested. Our number one mission is to drive increased shareholder value. With that, let me turn the call back over to Tom.
Thank you, Steve. Let me provide some added color on our quarterly results, beginning with revenue. For the fourth fiscal quarter ended March 31st, 2019, revenue was $9.7 million compared to $10.7 million in the third fiscal quarter ended December 31st, 2018. As Steve noted at the top of the call, the sequential quarter revenue performance was due to the lower IBW and ISM revenue, which more than offset the CNS increase. Within IBW, the expected revenue decline from commercial repeaters and DAS conditioners more than offset the sequential increase in sales of passive RF system components and the increase of our existing line of public safety repeaters. The sequential ISM revenue decrease was primarily due to lower seasonal sales of remote units and the lumpiness of our Optima software revenue, which was partly offset by increased support services revenue as annual renewals with several large customers took effect in our fourth quarter. For CNS, the sequential revenue increase was driven by higher sales of power distribution panels, network connectivity products, and fiber access solutions, all partly offset by lower sales of integrated cabinets. Moving on to the rest of the operating results, consolidated gross margin was 37.6% in 4Q compared to 42.8% in 3Q. Higher costs associated with excess and obsolete inventory, a less favorable mix, and the lower revenue all contributed to our quarterly gross margin dip below 40% for the first time in over 2 years. On a full year basis, gross margin was 42.1%, marking the second consecutive year in which we exceeded our consolidated target of 40% or greater. Non-GAAP operating expenses in 4Q were $5.9 million, up from $5.2 million in 3Q. About a third of the increase reflects our increased investment in sales and marketing and product development, while the rest was due to non-recurring expenses, primarily for acquisition-related activities. Going forward, we plan to manage quarterly non-GAAP OPEX more in the $5 to $5.5 million range. The lower gross profit and increased OPEX resulted in a 4Q non-GAAP operating loss of $2.2 million compared to a loss of $580,000 the quarter before. Non-GAAP net loss and EPS was $2.1 million and 13 cents per share in 4Q compared to $423,000 and 3 cents per share in 3Q. Non-GAAP net loss and EPS for the 12 months ended March 31st, 2019 was $1.7 million and 11 cents per share, compared to net income and EPS in the prior year of $4.4 million and 28 cents per share. The GAAP net losses in 4Q of $8 million and for the full fiscal year of $11.4 million included a non-recurring non-cash accounting charge of $4.7 million for the impairment of IBW intangible assets. Turning now to the balance sheet, our cash totaled $25.5 million at March 31st, 2019, compared to $27.1 million at December 31st. The cash used during the quarter was due to the operating loss and share repurchases. Under the stock repurchase program authorized by our board of directors in May 2017, and as part of open market 10b5-1 plans, in fiscal 4Q, Westel repurchased 74,230 shares at an average price of $2.11 per share for a total of $150,000. To date, from May 2017 to March 31st, 2019, Westel has repurchased 559,893 shares at an average price of $2.53 per share for a total of $1,414,000. Now, before moving on to the Q&A, let me summarize. We remain committed to the revenue growth opportunities we have in the IBW markets for public safety and ONGO. We are strategically focused on densification at the edge of the communication networks, a key enabler for 5G connectivity and IoT, all in our sweet spot. And we are concentrating our R&D, sales, and marketing on network edge solutions that solve for the increased capacity, intelligence, and deployment simplification needs of our customers. So with that, we'd now like to open up the call for your questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. And our first question comes from Mark Silk from Silk Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. You know, with all this talk about 5G, can you give us more? I know you talked a little bit about in the beginning of the call about this private LTE networks. Can you give us kind of more color? What kind of market it is? What the urgency for a company to want to do with a private LTE network? You know, I just want to see how that lines up when all the talk is about 5G.
Yeah. Good morning, Mark. This is Steve. Yeah, they're really two related subjects, but not exactly the same thing. Private LTE using the Ongo spectrum is really, as we see it, we're focused on the in-building portion of that. We see several verticals that are looking to enhance their capabilities for private data connectivity, wireless data connectivity within their facilities, for things like robotics, IoT, industrial IoT, unmanned vehicles, in the hospitality for highly secure connectivity for monitoring different devices. We're even seeing devices that are going to be hung on the person, be able to track personnel better within the medical industry. So the wearables. We see a developing market around that, specifically because of this shared spectrum allocation methodology that the FCC has developed for CBRS. So it's not really a replacement for Wi-Fi. It's really not necessarily an extension of 5G. It's an enhanced wireless capability to allow private networks to have mobility and security and reliability that you don't get necessarily from Wi-Fi. As this market matures, we certainly see the interoperability between Ongo and the current mobile network operators so that you will have full mobility capabilities. There are a couple of handset manufacturers that are now announcing dual SIM card devices that will allow Ongo as well as, you know, traditional cellular. And as 5G develops, CBRS spectrum will play a part in 5G. 5G is really just like LTE. It's an evolution, not necessarily a quantum change in technology.
No, that's good information. Can you give us an update kind of on your whole fiber, how that's going on that business model?
Yeah. Sure thing, Mark. As I said, you know, it's gone a little slower than we had wanted, certainly. But we did make a conscious decision late last year to slow down a little bit and take a broader view, a longer term view of what the market really is. You know, when George joined, he had some very specific ideas and some very specific customer applications that immediately received interest. We pursued those, but we kind of took a step back at late third quarter and said, okay, let's look at this larger market opportunity because we believe it is a very significant opportunity to add innovation, simplification of deployment, and enable, you know, densification. And I said, let's build product families instead of just simple solutions. And that's what we're doing. We've released two new products a week for the last almost 2 months. We continue to have a very robust product roadmap for our fiber solutions in several families and are seeing, you know, real traction within the carrier market and within the neutral host and wireless market. So not as fast as we would like, but the good news about this is it is internal development. We are developing our own intellectual property, and we are creating value, I believe, through that innovation.
Are you being affected at all, positively, negatively, with the whole tariffs and the potential even more greater tariffs?
So, Steve, hey, good morning. This is Tom Minichiello here. We weren't immediately affected. We felt a little bit of it in the third quarter, like really small. We are seeing an increase in how we're being affected. Again, it's relatively small in comparison to our total cost of goods sold. But one of the things that we're able to do is we have flexibility in the supply chain. So, for example, vendors that are in China, which is where the tariffs are coming from, we've got suppliers in other places like Korea and here in the U.S. that we can move our source of supply around to. So we're managing it as well. We do have some product that we do get from China that is subject to the tariffs, but it was small, you know, under $50,000.
Okay, so now you have $1.66 a share in cash, and I like the fact that you're really being cognizant about if there's not a good fit for a purchase, you'll just stick to internal growth. So I like the fact that you continue to buy back shares. And Steve, as you said, you know, you're talking about your own IP and you're creating value, and you talk about the, you know, you're 25 cents away from cash. I would love to see management, insiders, board, I'd like to see them buy shares. Because, again, it's, I know you are given shares, but it sends a big message that you see, which I see, the potential here, and it's nice to see that management agrees with me. So that's just my comment, and, you know, I just think you're setting stuff up for some pretty exciting future.
Appreciate that comment, Mark. Appreciate your continued confidence in us.
Our next question comes from Steve Bush from Everglades Resources. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Steve and Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Morning.
Just a couple questions. So the quarter was a bit weaker than I was expecting, and last quarter we had discussed that your break-even on a non-GAAP basis around $12 or $13 million, and you expected this, you know, to kind of reach those levels or higher this fiscal year. Do you still have confidence in that kind of outlook?
Yes, so Steve, this is Tom here. Good morning. We have, so our break-even, you really can't look at the OPEX this past quarter, as I was saying in the prepared script. We had some non-recurring one-time hits to the operating expenses. We're looking at an OPEX level in that $5 to $5.5 million range going forward. And so if you just take, you know, take the midpoint of that at a 40% gross margin, that would put the break-even on a non-GAAP basis right around 13, you know, between 12 and a half, 13, depending on the margin and the mix. And then it would put the GAAP break even at a couple million higher in revenue above that.
Yeah, so to elaborate, Steve, I mean, we'd be severely disappointed if we don't start to see the revenue growth that's necessary to, you know, to overcome that operating expense and get the break even or better. Certainly, you know, the next two quarters aren't going to be quantum leaps, I wouldn't expect, but we do, you know, we would be significantly disappointed not to see us get back to profitability.
So I guess what I'm saying is towards the latter, the second half of the fiscal year, right? Would you expect revenues to be up over $13 million, or what kind of look-through or ability to, you know, see in advance where your orders are headed? Are we stuck at this 10-11 million range for a year? Are we going to move up?
No, I wouldn't think. No, not a year certainly. You know, as I said, we have a growing pipeline of opportunities. Some of these opportunities are very significant, based upon more of a solution sales approach, especially some of the below grade opportunities that we discussed that we go into trial. You know, some of that is, you know, there's risk factors associated with trials and timing of those types of things. But, you know, if things line up the way we expect, certainly we expect to see growth on the top line within the year.
Okay, fair enough. The whole China Huawei situation, do we have any opportunity to take business that Huawei may be losing? Do we come across, you know, what's our relationship with Huawei and China in general?
So we don't directly compete with Huawei in a lot of areas. One of the areas that I think we will be able to differentiate ourselves with is in some of our public safety products that are made in the USA. We are definitely seeing a growing interest in that marketplace for American-made products. Certainly when we go offshore, we compete more with Huawei in the offshore opportunities, and they are, as everyone knows, a tough competitor. But here in the U.S., it's not really affecting us dramatically.
Okay, fair enough. And who's our top two competitors we run across in the U.S. in each segment?
Wow. Let's think about this. Go ahead, John.
I think, Steve, that because of the diversity of the products across the three business segments, you really have to take it on a segment-by-segment, almost a product-by-product basis within the segment. You know, we compete with a lot of smaller private companies that you probably don't know of or haven't heard of. On a more well-known scale, we occasionally run into the bigger competitors in our space, but we try to avoid that and operate in niches where we can, compete well and that are in our core competency. You know, DAS conditioners, repeaters, the remote monitoring, those are examples of these addressable markets that fit our sweet spot a lot better. You'd have to go product by product. We have a list in our 10K of all these competitors, and it's a pretty extensive list, and it's not all inclusive. So, that's what I would say there. I wouldn't start mentioning names of companies because there's, a number of them, and you may not recognize some of them. But
that's fair enough. Yeah. Okay. So, what do you think our cash? I just got a couple more questions. What do you think our cash burn will be over the next two quarters? And do you think we're going to end the year cash where we're at, $25.5 million, or back up towards 27 or lower?
Yeah. So Steve, that gets back to the earlier discussion around profitability and break even and revenue levels to get to that point. So we get to a break even point, a quarter beyond is usually when the cash starts turning positive. So that's just the normal flow of the business, right? So it's all going to depend on the profitability, which is all going to depend on the revenue ramping up.
Right. That's fair enough. Okay. And then I guess finally, in the product testing issues for your public safety offerings with your partner, what's the issue? Is it our issue? Is it their issue? Is it just a new product?
Well, yeah, it's a mixed bag. It started with the fact that we wanted to add some feature capability, which delayed a little bit. And then a lot of it is just regulatory testing. And when you're doing regulatory testing, you just get in line. And depends on how busy they are at that particular time as to where you get in the queue and how long it takes for that regulatory testing. When we went through the testing, had a couple of things we had to go back and tweak, so it just extended the delay a little bit longer than we expected. We've got real clarity on where we are with that, and as I said in the script, we believe that we'll be shipping product by the end of this quarter.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, good luck. Keep plodding along, and we'll sit here and see where we go.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. And our next question comes from Mark Siegel from Stanfield Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, guys. A couple of questions, and actually they're on a similar path of the last caller because I think it's pretty much what everybody wants to know. You mentioned OpEx coming down to $5 to $5.5 million a quarter going forward. It looks like last quarter, if you eliminate that one-time asset impairment, that OpEx was about $6.9 million. So, call it a ballpark quarterly reduction of $1.5 million. Is that a cash reduction? I mean, how much of that $1.5 million savings is cash versus non-cash?
So, Mark, this is Tom. Good morning. If you're looking at the GAAP operating expenses, it sounds like you're looking at, those are the numbers that include the impairment in the fourth quarter. If you, in the back of our press release, we do a reconciliation to our non-GAAP OPEX. which was just under $5.9 million. And that $5.9 includes, I would say, $400,000 or so of non-recurring items. As we were saying earlier, we were engaged in a lot of due diligence and M&A activity, and money was spent along with that activity. That's not repeatable. So immediately, you know, we're back down to a $5.5 million run rate, but we're also managing things in the OPEX to bring it down even lower. So that's why I gave the range of 5 to 5.5. So that's the OPEX that we're referring to.
All right. So, you know, free cash flow burn was about $1.4 million in the quarter ballpark because there was very little CapEx, and it looks like that's normal for you guys. I mean, would it be fair to say that if you repeated the let's face it, pretty bad quarter you just had, but without those extra expenses you're talking about, that free cash flow burn would have been $1 million or maybe a little under $1 million? And if revenue were flat going forward, is that what we would be looking at in terms of free cash flow burn?
Yeah, your analysis of the quarter just reported on is accurate.
Okay. So, all right. And so then my next question, and again, the last caller pursued this with you guys, and I want to pursue it a little bit more. Stephen, in the last call, and I'm actually looking at the transcript about this break-even thing, you said, and it's a direct quote, at least from the transcript, it will be within this coming fiscal year for certain. And I don't hear that certainty now. And look, I'm not looking for you to, you know, to pull an Elon Musk here and just lie through your teeth about it. but assuming I'm not hearing that certainty now, what changed? Like, you know, what changed from February to today that makes you feel less certain? And how do we fix, or how do you fix, I'm just a passive guy here, whatever changed?
Part of it is M&A. We had, you know, an M&A transaction we were pretty confident in that we did not pursue for good reasons. Fiber's taken a little longer to gain traction. You know, we certainly expected public safety revenues sooner. So I still remain bullish that we'll see top line growth and certainly see it within the next couple of quarters. But we're seeing that it's taking time to get traction. A lot of these types of products, especially the fiber products, have to go through approvals with the carriers and have to get acceptance. So the sales gestation periods are a little longer. But I do still remain extremely, extremely bullish. The other risk factors are, you know, we have been fortunate that UDIT held on a little longer than we even expected, but you never know. And one area that has been a little softer, as we mentioned in here, is the cabinet business. There is a shift going on away from, you know, some of the DSL work that we were doing with some of our carriers to fixed wireless. We're rapidly changing our path and developing some products to address the fixed wireless business and have some traction with some new customers. But I still remain extremely, extremely bullish on it. And as I said, we would be very disappointed if we don't achieve, you know, what we have in our sights for revenue growth this year.
Well, look, I mean, obviously, we'd all be disappointed. That doesn't, I'm sure. And to say that you're bullish that you see revenue growth is different from saying you're bullish that you see 30%, the 30% revenue growth, you know, needed to get to break even. So, you know, what are we looking at here? Are we looking at the burn getting, let's call it the normalized burn, getting cut from $1 million a quarter to $500,000 a quarter because you're now seeing revenue growth, you know, to 11.5 or 12 instead of 12.5 or 30. I mean, I appreciate that you're not just BSing through this thing, but, you know, I think every shareholder here would like a straight answer as to, you know, when are you really going to get to break even in this company? And sometimes you don't know, but I'm definitely not hearing the definitiveness that you had in the last call.
Yeah, we're certainly you know, we're managing towards profitability. I'm cautious on, you know, giving guidance on revenue because, you know, historically we haven't done that. As I said, we do have a growing sales pipeline. We do see, you know, revenue growth quarter over quarter. And, you know, the expectation, I think you characterized it pretty well, you know, 11.5. You know, we see incremental growth. I don't see quantum growth leaps in the next 2-3 quarters. I do see incremental growth. And, you know, certainly our goal is to get to profitability by third or fourth quarter of this year.
Okay. Look, I'll leave you with one compliment, which is that I'm happy you didn't just blow this balance sheet on an acquisition, you know, just to get something done. I mean, I buy a lot of little companies like you guys that are just very, very cheap on a sort of an EV to revenue basis, as you are. I mean, now you're probably selling at, you know, I don't know, 10 or 12% of revenue. And universally, there are great balance sheets. And my biggest fear is that the great balance sheet will be blown on something stupid. So I'm all for growing organically. You have my votes there, and, you know, I have a few percent of the company. So thank you very much for taking the questions.
No, thank you, Mark. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
And we are showing no further questions. I will now turn the call over to Steve John for closing comments.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. As mentioned, we have much to do to grow the business and drive up shareholder value. We look forward to speaking to you again next quarter.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating, and you may now disconnect.